This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is Lee Chui Lin alongside Ayman Rashad and Kelvin Yee. Coming up, we look at the way forward for Pakatan Harapan following their loss in Tanjung Piai.
And call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. All this coming up on the Evening Edition.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
7:06 in the evening with Lin, Kelvin and Ayman. And our next story is actually I was going to say a throwback, but really I think it is a conversation that we're going to continue to have because it is on Tanjung Piai. Specifically, today we're going to be taking a look at what went wrong for Pakatan Harapan during the by-election, what it means, and specifically what things will be like moving forward. Because yesterday we spoke with Professor James Chin on his thoughts on why the result was what it was. Today we want it to be perhaps a little bit more future-focused.
Yeah, because after the results came out, there was a lot of self-reflection, right? Some were like, we need a new game plan and putting the blame on the PM, whereas some was like calling for unity. And during our conversation yesterday, a lot of you pointed out that the loss is a lesson for Pakatan, considering there have been perceived unfulfilled promises or slow progress for reform.
So what does it mean moving forward for Pakatan? Well, I guess it can be argued that the party needs to show that they are still the right people to bring the needed reforms in the country. So if it was perceived that they've been slow on this, the Tanjung Piai results show that moving forward, they must improve on their performance.
Yeah, although I do think that they have been a little bit trapped in terms of what that performance means, because I think different segments of society have very different understandings of what improving on performance means, right?
And what Malaysia Baru means in general.
Yes. So no doubt, I think there is still the sort of behind all of this, there is still this idea of the manifesto. There is still all that stuff about bread and butter. But I think considering how there has been a little bit of a divide and conquer approach when it comes to different groups within the country and different sort of messaging being put out by the government, and not just them, but by politicians in general to try to appeal to those groups, I think that we do need to examine what we mean when we say improve on performance, because everyone's waiting for it, but it's a little bit of a potential lose-lose, I think. It's a bit of a catch-22 in terms of what that means.
But I think, like, at the very least, people are expecting that they'll be different from BN, to put it simply. But what we saw was that there's still racial politics still at play. And I think for me, moving forward, I want to see, what I hope to see, is that there will be less focus on race and more on what, you know, the bread and butter issues that people need, economic standing and our development as a society.
So we're joined now to talk about this by Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute. Bridget, as always, thank you so much for being on the show.
Most welcome. Good evening.
So, first things, does the defeat in Tanjung Piai offer any takeaways or lessons that actually differ from the previous by-elections and the losses that we saw there?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that are quite different. First of all, the margin was much larger, both historically and for Mahathir. And I think it's also a different type of by-election. So a lot of by-elections traditionally, especially before GE14, were about resources and trying to win over people through using local votes and local support, which the opposition often had a disadvantage in. The other types of by-elections involved like endorsement of individuals, but this by-election had a much more clear message, and it was about sending a signal. And I think historically, the by-election in 1988 in Johor was perhaps also an indicator of that. And so this is another fittingly Johor by-election, which has sent a signal to the federal government that things are not going right. It was very Mahathir-centric, very leadership-centric.
And what are the questions that Pakatan should be asking in order to, you know, effectively evaluate and analyze the Tanjung Piai loss?
I think there are three things. I mean, first of all, they need to look more carefully at their policies, and particularly how they're communicating their policies, how they're engaging with their voters. There really is a lack of connectivity. The messaging has been very poor, but the type of messaging that's coming out of the administration is not really pushed about moving Malaysia forward holistically. It's a lot of negativity, and you know, there are a lot of these things have been covered in detail in previous conversations about politicking and others. And in the by election per se, you also they also have to look at their campaigning. It was the same old set of issues. You know, it was about Najib. It was about, and there was a lack of credibility in those messaging. So I think the they need to have a very serious reflection as a coalition to how they're engaging and how they're portraying themselves to the electorate in a very substantive way.
One suggestion that came out to improve Pakatan's performance was perhaps for them to focus on delivering its manifesto promises. What could a better follow through be? You know, what could a better follow through with their pledges do to regain the support that they have lost?
Well, I think I'm less of a one of those who advocates for the manifesto because the manifesto has so many different things in it, and it, you know, in it, in that. As a consequence, and some of those things are very are not practical. So in my sense, what they really have to do is to begin, having a clear communication strategy, thinking about coordination, thinking about prioritization and focusing on those, and also having a future-oriented plan. And in that context, you know, there are some things that have to be done before they can even get there, which is they have to settle the secession issue. They have to stop self-destructive behavior in terms of politicking, which is really they need to sort of clearly identify the things that they're going to prioritize in the issues of reform. I think, you know, some clear deliverables would actually really go a long way. And they need to, you know, they need to really address some of the kind of racialized divide and rule tactics that they've been using, not only vis-a-vis each other in a self-destructive way, but vis-a-vis the society. They've been using, they've been pitting people against each other. And this is not what people who voted for them wanted. So I think these steps have to be first before, and in this context, move to things such as communication, prioritization, coordination, and so forth.
And, you know, Bridget, in terms of talking about why the loss happened the way it did, as well as moving forward, I feel like we're dealing with, it almost seems as if you have a group of people all shouting at the government about what they want, and everything is being shouted about with almost equal urgency. And that, I think, comes from all the things that you've just been talking about, right? This issue of prioritization, this issue of communication. So from your point of view, then, in terms of actual issues, in terms of what might be on the minds and hearts, really, of voters, what are the key things that you'd like to see an immediate focus on?
Well, I think, you know, clearly you need to focus on the economy. The economy is facing a lot more difficult headwinds globally. And as a consequence, you need to have a clear plan. The shared prosperity programs don't necessarily indicate a kind of clear sense of how the economy is going to move, what are the different orientations and which, of where the economy is going to be down the line, what steps are going to take there to get there. There's a lot of noise. There's a lot of interesting policies that are coming in, but they're not in a cohesive program that's connecting to people. So, for example, the Shared Prosperity Initiative, you know, most people don't understand, and they see this as very as kind of short term, and they don't. And there's no connectivity with it. I think these sort of programs, in terms of social welfare and the economy, which are so essential, are very critical, and they don't have that particular substance. Along with that, they need to reinforce the issues of stability because this connects into the economy. Malaysia is suffering high levels of capital flight as a result of the politicking and the self-destructive behavior of not clearly setting out where who's going to lead when and how as they move forward. And in terms of society, there has to be steps to deal with issues of inclusion. And this means it cannot be focused on the Malay rhetoric. Particularly, you need to reach out to ethnic minorities, the Chinese, the people in the communities in Sabah and Sarawak. There has to be more inclusion. And I think this has to be, this by showing and taking steps in this direction in these four areas in terms of you're going to see a tide shift in terms of perceptions of ordinary Malaysian.
We're speaking today with Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, to get her thoughts on really what Pakatan Harapan needs to do, I think, really heading forward after this massive loss in Tanjung Piai. If you have thoughts or questions, you can send them through. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bigotry Free Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
It is 7:17 in the evening with Lynn, Kelvin and Ayman. We're talking today about Tanjung Piai, trying to take a bit more of a future focus in terms of what we need to see from Pakatan Harapan moving forward. On the line with us is Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute. And earlier, you know, Bridget, we were talking about the coalition as a whole, but the man at the centre of all of this has, of course, been Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, with a lot of focus coming on how much blame should be placed, you know, whether there should have been a different approach. So what does it mean then for Mahathir moving forward, considering that there were these criticisms of his leadership following the defeat?
Well, I think he faces a very difficult issue in the sense that he has to, you know, he has to deal with the fact that, you know, in his first tenure as prime minister, there was a lot of criticism of his legacy in terms of weakening institutions, the contraction of democratic space, but there was also considerable economic development during that period of time. So many people were polarized. What's happening now is that there's that same polarization beginning, that when he first came in, there was a lot more people willing to give him a chance again to move forward, to kind of bring the country together. And his leadership has not necessarily you know, been able to do that. It's been, his approach has been highly negative. He's adopted some of the practices of the past of divide and rule. And I think right now, I mean, the question that is how he is choosing to move forward. Is he going to choose to take an approach that is going to be more divisive in terms of pitting different actors against each other, or is he going to step back and basically redefine his legacy again in terms of being able to move the country towards a future-oriented direction? And I think at this point, you know, the steps have been very not necessarily positive in terms of being able of putting Malaysia on track towards the future, in the sense of having a clear set of directions and stability of how that's going to move forward because of the dividing and rule strategies that he's been adopting as leader. And I think that self-destructive behavior has been very worrying.
So just on that note about the succession plan, do we just need to have newer, fresher candidates at this point within that plan? You know, perhaps those that are currently being considered are just too entrenched in the old ways, which are seemingly no longer welcome.
Well, I think he's going to have to deal with the issue of Anwar Ibrahim and the timing of his own of his own premiership, and that keeps changing. And I think these things really, you know, they send very negative signals internationally and to the markets and to the economy. And of course, they fuel a lot of the distrust that's happening within the context of the system as a whole. Political actors are feeding against each other. But I think the more central issue is not about Mahathir and Anwar. It's about the future leaders that are coming after that. And I think one of the issues is that Malaysia is not necessarily, at this point of time, grooming a second-liner generation leadership, which are actually going to be are very important. And there are individuals, but unfortunately, you know, they are not necessarily being groomed in a particular way that allows them to get experience and also be seen as part of the grooming process. And I think succession is not just about two individuals. It's about actually putting in place stronger leaders for the country that know how to understand how to address problems, that actually think about Malaysia as a holistic country as opposed to just certain communities over others, and of course actually sees and is aware of how to address some of the real challenges that Malaysia faces. Its competitive regionally has actually weakened, and these are challenges that the country are going to face.
So the Bersatu President Muhyiddin Yassin has warned that there needs to be drastic changes if Pakatan want to survive beyond one term. Do you think that there is a risk that the current government might be a one-term government?
Of course, there's always a risk in any government to be a one-term government. And I think Tan Sri Muhyiddin should begin looking at home and look in the mirror. Things at Home Affairs have sent mixed signals. And this is an area that is actually very critical for issues of political reform and institutional reforms. But I also think there are other things that need to be done from the perspective, and these are being echoed all across, a cabinet reshuffle, including perhaps, and I've argued for this in other places, technocrats. You need to have a clear communication strategy. You need different connectivity with the voters. You need to really ramp it up the corruption, the anti-corruption and practices, and deal with some of the patronage that this government is already being involved in. And as I've said earlier, it needs a clear economic plan of prioritization. You can't do everything, right? But you need to be able to tell the voters and tell the citizens what your plans are and what your goals are and how you're going to prioritize those goals so that you can be measured along those lines. At this point, because they don't have that, they open themselves up and make themselves more vulnerable to attack and criticism. And this was played out in the election, and this is played out in social media.
So you mentioned a cabinet reshuffle there, and this is something that we've been hearing about for quite some time. Considering the mood that we're seeing on the ground and the sentiment right now, do you think that this is something that would be welcome? And, you know, from the point of view of the voter, would it be seen as a positive move, or might it be seen as almost an act of, you know, lacking confidence?
Well, you're going to see both. I mean, people are going to see it negatively and positively. A lot of it's going to depend on where they put people and which seat, which positions are removed in terms of individuals, which individuals take over new positions. I think it's important to look at the substance of what a new cabinet would be. I think the real challenge, however, is, of course, it raises the issues of secession, whether or not Anwar himself comes into the cabinet. And, of course, this raises a lot of the tensions that's happening within the coalition itself. But I think, more generally, my view is a cabinet reshuffle done well can really help to jumpstart and restart the government in terms of its connectivity with voters, at least in the short term. And I think especially if they bring in certain candidates of caliber in the key sectors of people where they've been critical, in areas of education, in areas of the economy, areas associated with some of the ministers that have actually had questions about flying cars and others. These things just don't, they don't necessarily reinforce the credibility of the government.
There were reports of Azmin Ali meeting with BN MPs at his home last night, and now he's purported to be meeting with PKR lawmakers today. What do you make of these speculated meetings?
Oh, well, I think, the meetings happen all the time, and we know that there's been discussions of backdoor elite government issues for over a year now, I would say. But I think there are two issues involved in these meetings, the first of which is it involves Osman's relationship with his party, PKR. I think it has become an untenable relationship given the divisions within the party itself. My reading of these meetings is that Osman wants out, but he wants them to be give him a reason to get out. These meetings may be seen as a reason for him to be sacked. But I think this is part of the conflict within PKR itself. And I think Osman will probably move, it's a question of how and how soon. And then, of course, the other issue involved here is what's happening, the idea of a new government being formed behind the back door through deals in coalitions. And this happens in coalitions all across the world. And I think and this is something that Malaysia has to prepare itself for, the potential possibility of this happening. My sense, however, is since Tan Chong Pai and since a lot of the politicking, that neither side has the numbers yet. And, of course, some of that is, trying to show that they have numbers vis-a-vis others. So it's a sense of trying to use the public arena as a kind of contestation vis-a-vis the other different camps within the backdoor dealing.
What lessons and strategies would BN or perhaps Muafakat Nasional be taking away from their victory in Tanjung Piai?
Well, I think that they need to be, very careful. They need to really have a considerable self-reflection. They need to think very carefully about what they're doing wrong in terms of the. I think if you were, it's definitely for me. Tan Chong Pai was about Mahathir and the Pakatan Harapan leadership. If you're on the BN side, I think they have different. They have to be very cautious to recognize that this is not necessarily an endorsement for the opposition as a totality with PAS. Some of the votes that they gained in terms of Malay votes were PAS supporters, and they did help contribute to the victory. They were part and parcel of a lot of the cross-racial voting that voted against Pakatan Harapan. But I would be, if I was in the part of the BN or PAS, I would be more cautious not to overinterpret this, because this was a protest by-election.
And finally, Bridget, we've got just about a minute left to go. How do you see, or how can Pakatan kind of ready themselves for what looks to be a stronger, more confident opposition?
Well, I think, you know, there's that phrase, charity begins at home. Well, I think the coalition begins at home, that it needs to start looking inside. It needs to recognize that if they are not together, they will fall. And I think this is something that they have yet to fully appreciate, but the self-destructive actions have not really helped Pakatan, and it needs to step back and sort of and remember it's not about them, but it's about Malaysia. It's about moving the country forward, and this type of leadership, at this so far, hasn't done enough to be moving Malaysia to where it needs to go.
Bridget, thank you so much today.
You're most welcome.
You just heard from Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, weighing in on the Tanjung PI by-election. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.